Now let's go into chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 1. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. Now remember, Sanballat was one of the governors of Samaria. And this other person, Tobiah, the Amorite, was also a co-governor with him, as I understand this. And I would like to note that this points out that the people who lived round about Jerusalem were quite upset with the fact that they were rebuilding this wall. Because to rebuild the wall did several things. It made Jerusalem a city that was fortified now, a city that could defend itself, a city that could maintain its autonomy and become a city that had its place in the community and in the world. It also meant that they could carry on their own peculiar worship to God and religion without fear of being interfered with by those round about who might decide to raid or intrude upon their privacy. And so they were quite unhappy with this. They did not like the fact that this had been done, which would allow this city now to maintain its strength and to go into a stronger area. Although the Jews had been back for some 100 years, apparently they had never regained the stature that this city had had before it was destroyed. So when Sanballat heard this, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. Now this is going to provoke some kind of action on their part. And he spake before his brethren in the army of Samaria and said, "What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned?" And so you can see how he's got indignation here. And he also has mockery in the tone and in the questions that he asks. But it also reflects a true concern on his part. Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish which are burned? Now that last phrase is a pretty good description of what this city was like. Heaps of rubbish which are burned. Now you know that's not much of a place to live. And especially to refer to it as a city, if it can be described as heaps of rubbish which are burned. And this is indicates to us the kind of job that was ahead of them as they were rebuilding this wall. Now, Tobiah, the Amorite, was by him. He was the co-ruler of Samaria, and he was by Sanballat, or he was with him. And he said, "Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall." So you see, this is just more ridicule, more making fun of the work that God's people are doing. He says, if a fox goes on it, a fox can break down that which they are building. And so you can see how that in the light of all of this criticism of those who are their enemies, making fun of and ridiculing and implying that what they're doing is going to come to naught, could be quite disheartening. To the Jews. It could make them lose their zeal and their desire to carry out this work. And we can see that this is one of the methods that the devil uses on us today. Whenever we're endeavoring on a job, it's a hard job. Now, let's remember, this was a hard job that they were doing, this rebuilding this wall. It was quite a feat. We don't even build walls around cities today. Even a city as small as Hamilton, we wouldn't think about building a wall. What a job it would be. How much work, how much expense it would be. So just imagine then the tremendous work here. Well, today when we have a hard task ahead of us, and we do have if we live a Christian life, we got a hard job. Each one of us may not have the same burden to bear. We may have a different situation with our peculiar life. That is nevertheless a hard job and a hard burden for us. But as we try to bear this in a Christian-like way and to go through with the things that God would have us to do, then we're going to find the world is going to throw barbs at us. They're going to mock and ridicule and make fun and say, Why do you do that for? That's going to come to nothing. That's not going to amount to anything. You're just wasting your time. And so it'd be easy for us to get discouraged if we start listening to those that have no part in the things of God and taking their advice for what we're supposed to do. So in verse 4 we have a prayer by Nehemiah in face of all of this. And some of the Bible scholars are a little bit disturbed by the tone of this prayer, because his prayer has some pretty sharp cutting insinuations in it. He says, "Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity." Now, what Nehemiah is saying is saying, listen to us, God, we're despised. Turn their reproach upon their own head. Now, it seems like that Nehemiah is saying, cause their reproach to be turned against them. But according to some of the Bible scholars, the language here really is saying, the Hebrew language is really saying, their reproach will be turned upon their own head. And instead of give them for a prey in the land of captivity, it's really saying they will be given for a prey in the land of captivity. The verse 5 has more of the same. "And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee." And the true reading of this may be, "And their iniquity will not be covered, and their sin will not be blotted out from before thee." In other words, it could be that Nehemiah is simply predicting what's going to happen in view of the fact that they are wicked men and acting contrary to the wishes of God. And he concludes that prayer by saying, "For they have provoked thee to anger before the builders." Realizing that any time a group attacks God's people, it's going to provoke the anger of God. And so when you have God's anger provoked against a group of people, you can pretty well predict what the ultimate outcome is going to be. God is going to be opposed to them and their actions. And that seems to be the gist of this prayer that we read here in verses 4 and 5. So he goes on in verse 6 and he says, "So we built we the wall." So built we the wall. Now there was a lot included now in this little phrase, "so built we the wall." So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together under the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Now when he says all the wall was joined together under the half thereof, this probably means that the wall was built up to half its intended height, or half its original height, or half its ultimate height. And he says, "For the people had a mind to work." Now this word "mind" here really is translated from a word that would mean heart. The people had a heart to work. And so we see that when it's in our heart or in our mind to work, then we can get a whole lot more work done. When somebody's out there working in what we would say half-heartedly, they don't have their true full potential behind it, and the work's not going to be done nearly as well or as rapidly. So here he says the people had a mind or a heart to work. And we might keep that in mind as we think about what it takes to please God and do God's will, and the things that the Bible describes as being pleasing to God. It's working in such a way that you have a heart to work. Verse 7, "But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth." Now, these, as we said earlier, these people were most unhappy. These enemies were very unhappy that Jerusalem, right here in the very midst of them, was being built up. Well, we have to realize that for some 70 years, this city lay in desolation and ruins. And now for some 100 years, the people had come back and kind of half-heartedly really tried to reestablish it. And so the people round about hadn't been used to this being a power center for the God of heaven. And so as it begins to be built up now and the walls are being repaired, they can see that the walls are halfway finished. And these people are really busy. They've got a mind to work. They're going to get the job done. They're really unhappy about it, and they become wroth. Now, the same thing happens today when a church is established. You can take a community that's never had a church or can't remember the time when it did have a true church in it, and you can begin to establish a true church and to build the walls of Jerusalem there, figuratively, so to speak, and the people around about are going to take notice, and the more success you have, the more you get to the point that you have really completed this thing, then the more you're apt to have opposition if you're ever going to have it. And so that's what was happening here. Right in the midst of these nations, these different tribes, the city of Jerusalem was being refurbished and reestablished. So verse 8, and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Now these forces of evil, they might be ever so opposed to each other. But when it comes to fighting the people of God, they have a way of uniting and all conspiring and joining together to try to squelch this thing that makes them so unhappy. So they agreed to come them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and hinder it. So here Nehemiah, now his job was to see that the work on this wall was carried on and was not hindered, and he saw this thing that was coming. He saw his enemies coming. So verse 9 he says, nevertheless we made our prayer unto our God. Now that's the first thing that you have to do in order to be successful in life, especially as a Christian. The first thing you have to do is to make your prayer unto God. That is, you have to appeal and to communicate with God. That's what they did. Then he says, and set a watch against them day and night because of them. The second thing then, after you make the prayer unto God, is you go to work. They didn't just make the prayer unto God and sit back and do nothing, but they made the prayer unto God, and then they set a watch. They were watching for these enemy armies that had made the designs of going to attack them and hinder the work. So we pray to God and we depend upon God as though all depends on God, and then we set about and work and make preparation as though all depends upon us. And this is the way God intends for us to do. Now, you know, people get confused today when they pray to God for different things, and they think that if God wants them to pray for something, that God doesn't intend for them to work for it and to try to do anything to achieve it. And that if they have to work for it, then they shouldn't have to pray to God for it. And they get confused. But God intends for us to do both. For example, in the area of being sick and praying to God for healing from illness, I believe that God intends for us to pray to Him and to depend upon Him to help us achieve getting over our illness. But I believe He also expects us to do the things that we know to do and can do to help us get well. Now, today, in modern times, we have things available to us in this area that we didn't have 2,000-3,000 years ago. And some people say, well, because they didn't have that way back then when Jesus was doing miraculous healing, then we shouldn't use these things today. But it would be the same thing as if you went out here and had a box of matches and needed to have a fire, but you took a flint stone and started to hitting the flint, trying to get a fire started with that flint stone and praying to God to help you get this fire started, and you just didn't bother to strike a match and go ahead and start it. If you got a box of matches there, I fully believe that God intends for us to use what we have. How foolish to pray to God to start us a fire when we have a box of matches that'll start it. And that's the same principle that applies. The things that we have that are within our ability to utilize, I believe God intends for us to use those things. And at the same time, pray to Him for assistance and guidance. And so it is in the matter of getting well over a sickness. And so it was way back in the time of Nehemiah when it came time to build this wall. They prayed to God, and then they set the watch. They worked and they prayed. And we're going to see that they continued to do as they were able to do as we go through this chapter. Verse 10, and Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we're not able to build the wall. Now that's a cry that came up, and it's one that we might hear in the church today. Oh, it's just so hard to lead a godly Christian life that I just don't believe anybody is able to lead a Christian life. You just can't do it in this day and time. That's the cry you might hear. You just can't have a Christian family. You just can't raise your children to know about God and to know about the principles of the church. Now that's the cry that came up here. He said the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed. In other words, they had so much rubbish that had to be cleared out. It was a tremendous burden to have to carry all of this out. And those who were bearing that burden, their strength had decayed. And there is much rubbish, so that we're not able to build the wall. Now that was one thing that hindered Nehemiah on the one hand. And he had to rectify that. He had to get them so that they could and would work and not feel like their strength was decayed. Verse 11. And our adversaries said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. Now we're going to learn it in this next verse that there were Jews who lived out among these people, and they were bringing reports in to Nehemiah as to what they were thinking and planning. Nehemiah knew what their plans were. He knew that the adversaries were saying this, that they're not going to know or see until we come in the midst of them and slay them and cause the work to cease. We're going to sneak up on them, and we're going to cause them to fail because they're not going to know we're coming. Nehemiah knew this. So he had weakness within his camp, those that were saying they couldn't do it, they didn't have enough strength to do it. He had threats from without the camp, those who said we're going to sneak in and we're going to slay them and cause the work to cease. Now verse 12, and it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they shall be upon you. Now this is a difficult verse to interpret here. But what this means is, it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came. In other words, there were Jews who lived out among these enemies. They dwelt by them. They knew about the plans. When they came to Jerusalem and told Nehemiah what was being planned. When they came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us. And then there's these words in italics, they shall be upon you. And that's not found in any original manuscript, those italicized words. And what this really means probably is that these spies came in and said, every place you turn to, every direction you go, you're going to find these enemies coming in toward you. You're surrounded. On every hand, you're beset in every quarter by these enemies. And so this was valuable news to Nehemiah because he knew then that they were in grave danger of losing the work unless they really made some strenuous preparations. Verse 13, therefore set I in the lower places behind the wall and on the higher places, I even set the people after their families with their swords and their spears and their bows. So Nehemiah, he was kind of the general, the overseer. And he went to the low places of the wall, and he went to the high places of the wall. And he armed these people. He armed them after their family with the swords and the spears and the bows, so that they were able then to defend and protect themselves against the onslaught of the attacking enemies. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your houses. Now, Nehemiah, one of the ways he used here to encourage them was to bring some things to their remembrance. He says, remember the Lord, which is great and terrible. Now, we've had this phrase once before about the Lord being great and terrible. Great means he had all power. He was capable of doing anything that he desired to do. terrible means that he has the ability and the character to be able to bring about destruction or wrath on those that oppose him. He can be a terrible God. He is a terrible God. So you've got this kind of a God on your side now. He's great and terrible. So remember the Lord, which is great and terrible. Now, as we fight the Christian life, this is one of the things that should help to bolster us. This fact of being able to remember the Lord, that He is great and that He is terrible. And if He's on our side, all of these qualities then go in our favor if He's on our side. But Nehemiah further says, "And fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses." Now, we'd like to notice here just a minute that Nehemiah armed these people and he tells them to fight. He tells them not to be afraid, but to fight. Now, as we transpose this into modern Christian living, under the new law, under the Christian dispensation, we find that we also are to fight. We also are in a warfare. We also are in a state of building. We have to build a wall also ourselves. But our weapons are different weapons. The weapons of our warfare, as we studied a couple of weeks ago, are not carnal. We don't use carnal weapons. We don't use swords and spears and shields, literally. We use these only in a spiritual sense. We use the Word of God, which is the sword of the Spirit. We take the shield of faith and the breastplate of righteousness and the helmet of salvation, and our feet are shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. These are the kind of weapons we use. We use weapons that are spiritual weapons. They're very real, but they are spiritual and not carnal. And our warfare is a very real warfare. It's a fight to the death, but it's a fight for our spiritual selves, not our physical selves, but our spiritual selves, our souls. And so as we wage this warfare, we must remember then that we're fighting with our God, who is great and terrible. And we're fighting for our sons and our daughters and our brothers and our children and our houses. We're fighting for ourselves spiritually, as a spiritual community. And it is a battle. And just as these enemies were surrounding the city of Jerusalem and were ready to attack every time they got a chance, even so we today are surrounded by our enemies. We're surrounded by enemies. And they're ready to attack us at every opportunity. And if we're able to survive, we're going to have to be doing just like these people did and be ready and able to fight and to work. Fight and to work. We're going to see that's what they did. Verse 15. "And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, and everyone unto his work." Now the enemies found out that Nehemiah knew about their plans. Their counsel had come to naught. All these plans they'd made, Nehemiah knew about them. He knew what their plans were. He knew what they were going to do. He knew how they were going to attack. He knew about it. And you know that same thing happens to us today. If we know how the devil works, if we know how he operates, and we can know just by reading such passages as this right here, then we know what they're planning to do. We know what their plans are. We don't have to go and have them tell us. We know what their plans are. And so that's half the battle, it seems, knowing what the enemy's going to do. And so this verse says, "It came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught." This hurt the enemy, that we returned all of us to the wall and everyone unto his work. "And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears, the shields, and the bows, and the habergeons, and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. So what he says here is that half of them worked, and half of them held the weapons of warfare to defend themselves. So It was a twofold thing. Half working building the wall, the other half ready to defend it. Now, is that any kind of a lesson for us today? Should not we be prepared today to also not only work and build the wall, but also prepared to defend it? It is not in God's plan for a congregation to have one person who's known as the pastor who does all the defending. He does all the building. In this situation, all of them were involved in the working and in the defending. Half work, half defended. And this word here, habergeons, means breastplates. So they held the spears and the shields and the bows and the breastplates. Verse 17, they which build it on the wall, and they that bear burdens, with those that laded, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. Now this is kind of the way he describes it. They worked with one hand, and they held a weapon with the other, so that each person was capable of going both ways. He could either work on the wall, or he could hold a weapon, or he could do both. He could work on the wall with one hand, and he could hold a weapon with the other hand. And that's exactly the way it's described here. So you see what kind of a work we are to do for God. We're to be able to work and to build, and at the same time, maybe with the other hand, to also defend what we built. Build it and then defend it. That's the work of God's people. That's the work of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And as we today figuratively and spiritually rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, we must be able to work and also defend. Work with the one hand and hold the weapon with the other hand. For the builders, everyone had his sword girded by his side and so builded, and he that sounded the trumpet was by me. Each one had the sword by his side, and that's the way he built. He worked with the sword by his side. You know, I'm reminded as I was a child, growing up during World War II, of reading and hearing about the so-called Seabees. The Seabees who went over and built the landing strips and roads and so on when they would land on an island with the U.S. Army. How that they'd have a big bulldozer, a man driving the bulldozer, another one standing on there with a rifle ready to defend him. Well, this is kind of the picture I get as they built this wall. One working and one ready to defend. But then Nehemiah, he had the trumpet sounder with him. Now, you know, he went to the high places and the low places. He scouted around all over the wall. He was looking for trouble spots, and he had the trumpet player with him. Verse 19, and I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us, our God shall fight for us. Now, here he says the work is great and large. This work is great and large. And we're separated upon the wall. Now that's the way the work was. It was a huge project. And the workers, even though there might seem to have been a lot of workers, they had to be separated from each other. They had to be far apart. They couldn't all just be working right together all the time. And consequently, when they were separated, then they were vulnerable to an attack from the enemy. So Nehemiah says, in whatever place, therefore, you hear the sound of the trumpet, wherever you happen to be, when you hear this trumpet blow, resort ye thither unto us, and our God shall fight for us. In other words, you come where the trumpet is. When you hear it blow, you come to the place of the trumpet. That meant there's trouble. It meant there's danger. Everybody collect together where the trumpet is. Now, there's some lessons in this for us. Today, as we carry out the work of the Lord, one of the most obvious things is that the work is great and large. The work's great and large. We have a whole world in which to work. The gospel is applicable to every corner of the earth. So it is great and large. And we are just a simple remnant trying to help carry out this work. And so we're going to find ourselves have to be separated. We can't all stay bunched together all the time. as we carry out this work, we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. Now, we're always on the wall. That is, we're always working in the kingdom of heaven. But even though we're still in the kingdom of heaven, we may be separated one from another. That may be a necessity to carry out the work because the work is so great and so large. But let us remember, when we're separated, then we are the most vulnerable. That's the time when the enemy can attack and when the enemy may overcome us. Because when we lose our Christian associations, we automatically begin to grow weaker. We're going to grow weaker. That's just a rule you cannot refute. You're going to grow weaker. The Bible says, be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good morals. And when you get away from other Christians, then you have evil communications. You can't have any other kind of communications. And so the lesson is then, even though the work is great and small, great and large, even though we are going to have to be separated from one another for times, let us be prepared to come back to the sound of the trumpet. Let us be prepared to congregate together when the danger occurs. Let's go to other Christians. Let's congregate with other Christians. In moments of weakness or despair, we need the association of other Christians. We need to go where the trumpet is. And then he says, our God shall fight for us. When you hear the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us. Verse 21. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Now, they worked long, from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. They held the spears. Half of them held the spears. They were ready to defend. And it was a long, tiresome job, I'm sure of that. Likewise, at the same time said I unto the people, let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day. Now, a lot of these people lived outside of Jerusalem. They lived out on the plain. But Nehemiah said, at night you come on in and stay in Jerusalem. So at night you can help us by serving as a guard to us, and then during the day you can help us by being a laborer. So he had them to come in and stay in the walls at night to assist. And that again is a lesson to us, that we are to be as close together as we can as a Christian family, because it's by being within the confines of this wall, by being close to each other, that we can serve as a protection for each other. One out there on the plain who can't do any good, in with the others, he can serve as a guard at night and a laborer during the day. Verse 23. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that everyone put them off for washing. In other words, he said, we kept our clothes on 24 hours a day. The only time we took our clothes off was so we could take them off to wash them. But showing that the labor was so strenuous that they spent every moment either working or resting and preparing to go back to work. And while they were resting, they were then acting as guards. They were working or guarding. Didn't even have time to take their clothes off except to take them off to wash them. And showing us today that our job as Christians is really and truly a 24-hour-a-day job. It's a 7-day-a-week job. It's not just when we assemble together. It is at all phases of our existence. We are the servants of God.